Comic Book Legion podcast. I am Mark, and with me is my co-host Clay. What's up, dude?
Hey, man. What's up? I am doing great.
You are doing great. You gave me a tease, but I didn't want you to tell me off air, because if you have listened to our past show, I was telling Clayton the beauty that is Black Mirror.
Oh, yeah.
And this is Detective Comics Black Mirror Scott Snyder, my favorite Scott Snyder story till this day. So I want to know what your thoughts are, since you just finished reading it. But before we do that, on this show, we talk DC Comics. We are a DC Comics podcast where we are going to review our top five. Would you say favorite books, or just kind of like weeding them out, especially like on a week like this?
I mean, a week like this, it's more of the top five of the week. I know that there's some titles that other people definitely like more than others. Of course, this is all opinionated. A good friend on Twitter of ours would say that it's all subjective. But we kind of just grab the books that are more interesting to both of us. So that way we're not always harping on books. We're not always being negative on books. Some of these books may have a negative connotation when we do talk about them, but it's about characters that we do really enjoy. So we want to always stay in some light positive.
Absolutely. And this show, Comic Book Legion, is part of the Nation of Nerd Podcast Network, where we're also joined with another show, which is the Cool Ass Podcast Show. And we got a new addition.
Oh, yeah.
Which is...
I guess I should go ahead and say it now. My podcast, Fanboy Comics Podcast, is officially a part of the Nation of Nerds network. I do have an episode ready. I'm not sure when I will post it. I say it's ready, but I may have to edit it a little bit. But maybe within the next week or two, we can throw that out there for everybody to listen to.
Awesome. And we also have a website, which is comicbooklegion.com, where right now we are strictly, at least at the moment, since we're, you know, this is week two of it being open, a comic book review. So if you are a fan of wanting to contribute and giving your thoughts on comic books and what you like, dislike, doesn't only have to be DC Comics, that this is publisher wide. So anything you like, come on and, you know, give us a DM either at CB_Legion on Twitter. You can reach me personally at Mark Fossus, and where can they find you, Clay?
They can find me at Fanboy Clay. Yeah, and so, you know, we have some really books coming up in the future that aren't called on as far as dibs. I know a lot of us, you know, want to review certain books. But I will say the Marvel books are kind of free game just because they don't send out reviews. Everybody has to go out, buy those books, read them, and then review them themselves. I know that War of the Realms comes out today. I'm really excited to read that. I am excited for what else comes out today? Man, I have not been keeping up this week.
Well, if we're going Marvel, I mean, I know that like Captain America.
Oh yeah,
like at least me personally, that's something that I follow. So like War of the Realms and Cap are like the two Marvel books, at least I think this week, that I will be buying. But Marvel did have a really big week.
Awesome, yes.
Because DC had a really small week.
I mean, you say big week, but I'm pretty sure that 20 of those books are number one variants of War of the Realms. But it is a big week.
Yeah, I ended up getting the 1 in 50, the Gabriel Del Otto.
Oh yeah,
variant.
Del Otto, yeah, he's a really
Del Otto. Yeah, yeah, because it was a 1 in 50. So luckily, my store ordered exactly 50.
Nice.
And I'm like, dude, I know I'm the first person that has sent you this email. So if this book, and he mentioned and he told me that I did get the book. So I'm like, yes.
Yeah,
because you know it's all about the comic book wall, man.
Oh yeah, dude. I looked at the variants this morning because I was just kind of seeing what I would be picking up today, and I saw there was a really nice J. Scott Campbell Hera,
mm-hmm.
Hela variant. I think there was a Ryan Ottley Spider-Man Miles Morales and Spider-Gwen variant. Really, really cool ones out there. I think mine, just because it is he's just a legend in himself, is the original Arthur Adams cover. I'm really looking forward to grabbing.
Yeah, yeah, that one's great too. That one's awesome. So, before we get into our review show, which will contain spoilers, so if you haven't read the book, just go ahead and read the book and then come back to us. If you don't mind getting some things spoiled, then, you know, listen on and enjoy. But before we do that, we need to talk about Black Mirror. So, you read Black Mirror, you finished it yesterday. What did you think?
Yeah, so I finished it yesterday. I had been reading it, I think, on... what's today? Today's Wednesday. So I read it, basically, a good chunk of it on Sunday and Monday. And I loved it. For one... like I said, I didn't read much of Dick Grayson as Batman. I only read him while it was the Battle for the Cowl, when all the three Robins were, you know, trying to be Batman at one point. But
yeah,
with Black Mirror, it was predictable but not predictable. It was something, just because, you know, unfortunately, I am reading this after, you know, three issues of Batman Who Laughs. After a little bit of story on Batgirl, I am currently reading some of the Bat Family through the New 52. So I have a little bit of insight on some other things, but that didn't ruin how good the story was.
I'm actually happy that that's the case, because I didn't think about how predictable that story could actually be in terms of, like, since you know everything already.
Yeah.
You know? So it's kind of like, since you know who James is, you know what he's done, I can see how that story might not have the same gravitas as it is if you were reading it, you know, on that day, like grabbing it from the shelf. But I'm glad you still enjoyed
it. Yeah, so I don't want to spoil for anybody who hasn't read the book, but there is a part where Dick Grayson and James Gordon are talking, and Dick Grayson remembers something, and then he has to go out and be Batman for a split second. And then James Gordon goes to this random house, and he goes to this guy. He's like, oh, yeah, me and Dick were just talking about you. And you see the condition that that guy is in.
Mm. Oh, my God. That's what I was talking about last week when I'm like, dude, I had no idea that they would put this on a comic.
So I literally at work, like, just, oh, beep. Like, I and all my coworkers kind of just, like, looked at me and were like, "What? Are you okay? What's going on?" I was like, "Oh yeah, I'm fine. I'm gonna take a break from this real quick." I wasn't expecting it, and that's the cool thing, is things like that could still surprise me in the book, and it was really, really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome, and the book's pretty.
Yes, yes, Jock did an amazing job. I do have, like, some small nitpicks on how he draws some characters. But overall, the story was awesome. It was really well written with Snyder. The version that I got actually had a first draft of the script, so I got to read some of that. The character design for Batman and the rough drafts for, like, each cover. Really, really cool stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah, so that was... It's kind of nice. It's kind of nice seeing, like, his rookie card. Like, Black Mirror is Scott Snyder's, like, DC rookie card.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice, like, seeing, like, oh, this is who he is now. But seeing, like, where he started, I was like, yeah, this is nice.
And a lot of the stuff that he said and referenced in Black Mirror actually plays a good part in the, like, first story of New 52 Batman, which is really cool.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've read it, so... I might do that just because now you kind of piqued my interest. Because if you're seeing little ties with Court of Owls, then that's interesting.
Yeah. So
I gotta check that out.
And I will say there was one part in Black Mirror where Dick Grayson Batman is flying, and for no reason whatsoever, in the Batwing or whatever, for no reason, right in front of him is an owl, and they put it there like right where you can see. Oh, that's an owl. So I don't know.
Oh, snap.
I don't know if he was like planting seeds right there.
Well, it could be, because that was his only story, and right after that detective, that's when Flashpoint happened.
Yeah.
And then it was New 52.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that he was already done with that story, and he was already working on New 52.
Yeah, and what I was going to tell you before we got on the air, there is a website called Unknown Comics. As of right now, I don't know if they're sold out, but I bought mine. They are selling a foil cover of Jock's 880, where it has like the Joker that's made up of all the bats.
Oh, so gorgeous.
Yeah, so I purchased that because I know we were just talking about you purchasing that Midtown variant for Deceased. I purchased that one like immediately, because it was right after I finished Black Mirror, and so I saw it and I immediately took it. So I was like, yeah, I definitely need this in my collection.
Awesome. Yeah, I got it. Unknown Comics.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to check that. I'm going to put that actually on my iPad. All right, so then, in the meantime, while I'm just typing that up here, jumping into the reviews of this week, the first book that we're going to discuss is actually Deathstroke, and this is Deathstroke number 42, which is part two of the Terminus Agenda. You're getting a little bit more of the Deathstroke versus Damien, and I think this issue is mainly, I guess in a way, I mean, I didn't enjoy it as much as I did the first one, mainly because I didn't really care for much about, you know, the kid's mission and how they ended up screwing things up. But what I want to know, and it's one of the main reasons why I'm still reading this, is I want to know, how is Deathstroke going to fix Damien? Because I think that was like the biggest thread in terms of like the first issue. You either had that one or Wally West finding out about Damien in this prison. Yeah. Now, the Wally part, they kind of, at least in this issue, you saw like little subtle hints, but they didn't really talk about it.
Yeah, you kind of see it like in the cover, you know, where is Deathstroke and like what's going on? But they don't really touch up on it. You know, you see that Deathstroke is still tied up. You see for a small moment the villains that they have captured kind of like raising Deathstroke's ego, like, oh man, he's the greatest villain that there is. He can't be captured. He, you know, he's always one step ahead, and he's basically Batman and da 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 da. And it's really weird to see Black Mask like this, because Black Mask, when I've always seen him, he's a very hard driven and kind of in that very leadership type thing, because he runs a mob, he runs a gang. So mm-hmm. him to, you know, I'm sorry for this term, but brown nosing Deathstroke, I was just like, what in the world is this guy doing?
Yeah, it felt very odd seeing all like these rogues and the way that they were worshiping Deathstroke.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, because they, you don't even hear them talk like that about Batman, who's always defeating them.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? So I guess it's because he's a former villain, but there were some questionable choices here. What was kind of interesting is this character Bradley. You see this kid Bradley, he's inside of the hospital. You can see that it looks like he's talking to a priest about certain actions that have occurred, and he's going to make sure that the person who put his mom in this, was it mom or grandma? I'm forgetting. I think it was mom.
I think it was his mother.
Yeah, his mom in the hospital is going to make him pay. So in the meantime, you're seeing the Titans, that they're all disguised thanks to Quigen, and they're going against trying to capture this kid Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
And who we end up finding out who this kid is, his name is Blackrock, which, I mean, can he mess up like the foundations of the Earth?
I don't know what his
like
power
his,
is.
Because I kept on hearing, like, you know, they kept on talking about, like, it seemed like the foundation and there were, like, seismic activity. So I'm assuming maybe that's his...
Yeah, maybe some small earthquake type abilities.
Yeah. So in the meantime, you got Deathstroke, who, of course, was able to escape what Damien had him in. And Deathstroke, for a little while, you were seeing him talking about, like, talking to his son, Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Jericho's like, do you need my help? And you could tell that their relationship's completely fractured.
Yeah.
And in a way, Deathstroke has a better relationship with Damian, and you're just seeing him talking, and he's kind of like getting in his head. He's bothering him. He's kind of like taunting him. He's like, what are you going to do? What kind of decision? Are you going to let these people die? No, you can't, because it's not for the greater good of what the mission is.
Yeah.
The mission is to stop. Yeah.
I will say that it was very interesting on how they did all this, because
yes.
Deathstroke kind of, he got out of his cell. He kind of went up into their headquarters and kind of just made himself at home. And at one point, I forgot how he did it, but he's talking to Damian, and at one point he was talking to Wally West, but I'm not sure how he's doing it.
He mentioned that he was able to talk with Wally because even though he no longer has the Speed Force in him, he's still connected to it.
Yeah.
So I had no idea that in the Speed Force you can like speak telekinetically.
Yeah,
like so that was odd. So I don't know if that's like a new power that Christopher Priest just created.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was interesting though, like seeing a Deathstroke just chilling, eating a hamburger, and he's like in pajamas with like a Batman shirt.
Yeah.
Eating like, I was like, I don't know. It's just, it doesn't seem very mercenary, but then again, he's dealing with like a 12-year-old, a 13-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So it could just be that, you know, Deathstroke is doing this more because it's like a child. So he's not playing the same exact role. I don't know. Like, I'm kind of questioning those choices. But I did like the art by Carlo. Man, I don't want to butcher his last name. Pagulian? Pagulian? Pagulian?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I got to say that this was definitely a step up compared to what we were getting in Teen Titans with the big lips
with
and the
duck face lips. Yeah.
Yes. The duck face lips. Like this was, so I, Carlo Pagulian, it really enjoyed it. I thought that the art scenes were, it was good. And you know, there was a,
I will say I enjoyed the parts where things slowed down for like Wally West when he was in super speed and things like that. Cause it really showed how much Deathstroke learned while having the Speed Force.
Yes.
Because he's in detail sharing, like, with Wally, hey, you need to do this. Hey, you have this much time. And that was one thing that kept bothering me, because he kept repeating it. He's like, oh, you know, it takes this long, but that's a lifetime for a speedster. I was like, okay, we get it. Speedsters are fast.
Yeah, they said it like three times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
so, I hear you. Little nitpicks, but it was okay. I mean, I'm still, you know, issue one was I'm going to fix you. Issue two is you have to kill me.
Yeah, I was just about to say that's the kind of cliffhanger that we are, that we see in this, at the end of this issue. We see Damian finally confront Deathstroke, and he's like, hey, what do you want? What are we doing here? And that's when Deathstroke says, it's simple. You're going to kill me. And I have no clue what this is hinting at, what it's going for, so we'll see.
This is what, four parts?
I believe so.
Okay, so we'll see where it comes from that. I mean, I'm not excited about it, but I mean, I feel like we're already halfway into this event, so we'll just kind of, I guess, ride along, unless there's just like a jam-packed week and we might not be able to discuss it, but if not, I mean, we can always recap it
for sure.
So jumping into, this one's going to be interesting. Female Furies, number three.
Okay,
so written by Cecile Castellucci and illustrated by Adriana Mello, colors by Hi-Fi. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, I read this book. I read the first issue. I didn't read the second one. So some things I was like, what is going on? But near the end, it's a good enough story to kind of keep you kind of just there for that, like just what it entailed is what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
So I wasn't lost too much on this story. I will say I love Hi-Fi on colors. Hi-Fi does everything good, no matter what they touch.
Yes.
But with this story, I know there was a lot of controversy with what this story kind of jump-started with and
yes.
how it was going to go forward. And I don't think they're stopping with that kind of controversy. The contents in this book are super intense.
Yes.
But I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's... I feel like, see, like, this issue to me is, yes, because this is... I understand the reasoning why the writer is trying to touch on this topic. My biggest gripe with issue one was that it felt very on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
And even, like, over-exaggerated to a point where it's kind of like, this is a serious matter, but you're bringing it so over the top where it's kind of hard to want to take this matter as serious as it should be.
Yeah, it was almost
because
almost
like,
a parody.
I'm like, come on, this is ridiculous. Yes, kind of like that. This issue kind of represents a little bit more of what I was looking for, where you can see the pain, you can see exactly what's been happening, but it's done in intelligently, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's done very subtle. Where it's kind of like we're following mainly Aurelie,
mm-hmm.
where in the first issue we see where she is just getting, by Willix, getting groped and molested, and she's trying to get away from that,
mm-hmm.
which is understandable. This is not a life where you really want to be doing this forever.
Yeah.
Others have, you know, kind of already succumbed to the, this is the way life is.
Yeah.
And either you can let it happen to you, but you can come out stronger out of it, or you can have the mentality like Aurelie, where it's kind of like, you know, she was being tempted by, like the dream, it's the dreamer. I believe it was just a dreamer, right?
I believe so.
I mean, that's what I wrote here, just like the dreamer. I mean, there's probably another name, and if I happen to find it. But I believe it was like the dreamer, and the dreamer is kind of like tempting, like, well, I can give you the life and I can give you the peace and the happiness that you desire, while you have Granny Goodness is pissed off and she's getting the other, Furies led by Barda to go ahead and find Aurelie.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, I felt bad for her, like when she was found. Because you can see the absolute pain that she was actually absolutely going through. And this is not something that she wants to, you know, she doesn't want to go back to this kind of life. And seeing what happens later, it was a bummer.
It was Beautiful Dreamer. That's her name.
Beautiful Dreamer. Yes, there we go. But again, I mean, it was a bummer to see Aurelie, like the way that she gets back to this life. Of course, Willix now is there, and he creates these fire, like molted
boots,
lava, like boots. And he's like, now you could just like dance forever. But she's pretty much just being tortured. So now she's dancing to the point where her legs just pretty much just, it melts off.
Yeah. The boots are so hot that it severs like right below the kneecap. And you immediately see what's going on as soon as she puts the boots on. And it's just horrible. And
yes,
this is when you see like some of the Furies make, you know, sense of everything. More so, I'm saying Barda, because she sees Aurelie there lying dead, basically, or almost dead on the floor. She's, what is going on? What happened? She finds out what happens. She talks to Granny, and Granny's like, well, this is what happens. You know, we go into being Furies knowing this might happen, and we just got to suck it up and be the best we can be, so that way we can, you know, be the strongest Furies ever. And it's a horrible way of thinking, and I know just because the way it ends with a very familiar character, don't want to ruin the entire book, going to Barda, and hopefully this will push a more brighter kind of success for the Furies throughout the rest of the book.
I will say, though, I love the art.
Yes. Yes,
Adriana Mello, I love the feel that it feels like if I'm reading like Jack Kirby, like a fourth world, like back in the 70s, if I'm reading like something like that, I feel like this is as close that you can get to it with it being modern still.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like, you know, some comic fans might not be able to appreciate like classic art anymore. Because they're like, wow, I've been seeing too much good stuff. To go back to something like this, it feels like a downgrade.
Yeah, I recently picked up a trade off of Half Price Books, and it was Grant Morrison's JLA. I'm reading it and I'm enjoying it, but man, that art is like it's hard compared to the stuff that we get now. We have definitely been spoiled with such good art here in these recent years. So people don't take it for granted.
Yes, absolutely, because we are in a very good time when it comes to art. it's pretty disgusting on how good the art looks now. Well, talking about a beautiful book, it's a wacky book, but it sure is a pretty book, which is Green Lantern number 6.
Yes. So
what did you think of this?
Green Lantern number 6. I have been, what's the word? I had to delay my reading a while ago. And so jumping into 6, I was a little confused, but I was able to go back and understand some parts of what was going on. But I will say this was pretty awesome. I like the outcome of what happened. I will say this. I love Liam Sharp's portrait arts.
Oh,
so like when it's just like the cover, like with Adam Strange and Green Lantern, I think that looks awesome. But there is some stuff when it comes to the landscapes and putting a lot of stuff in one panel or on one page where he tries to just have way too much in there that I feel like is like it doesn't really, I don't even know the words for this.
I understand what you mean, that it's like, for me, there's certain moments like in past issues when you're seeing him drawing Oa, it's good. Sometimes I feel like, you know, that phrase, you know, like just simple is better.
Mm-hmm.
Like just stay a little bit more simple, because some of the panels that I loved the most in this book were just when you're seeing the standoff between him and Strange and you're just seeing the close-ups of the face.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is really good facial expressions. You can see, you know, when a character is thinking what they're actually might be feeling. I like that. I was like, wow, this is really good. And when you're thinking about it, it's the most simplest of the backgrounds.
Yes.
But it's kind of like, I love the way that he treated Hal in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought Hal was portrayed very well in this comic. But it's I do see what you mean, that when you're looking into some of the more busy panels, it becomes a little distracting. And you can kind of see some things that were maybe not as polished because he just didn't have the time to put all that detail into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But with this book, we ended last issue with what's his newer name now that Hal Jordan chose? Parallax Blackstar or Blackstar Parallax, I think it was.
Something. I'm with you with Green Lantern. I haven't read like the last three. I had to read them all like back to back to back to read this one. So when it comes to like remembering everything in this story, I feel there's so much weird dialogue that I kind of, when it comes to Grant Morrison, and I've mentioned this on like the Nation of Nerd show, is I don't always get Grant Morrison. So sometimes I feel like I'm reading it, I don't really know what the hell I'm reading. But as long as I have an idea of where the story's going, I can just simplify it.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm going through with Justice League right now. With, like I said, I bought that trade in Half Price Books, and I feel the same way. But with this,
yeah.
So they had captured Adam Strange, and they basically tell Hal, hey, you need to kill him. And Adam Strange's like, what's going on? Hal, why are you doing this? Please, like, please, you know, we're buds, we're heroes. You can't do this to me. And Hal's like, okay, well, if I'm going to kill him, I'm not going to kill an unarmed man. We're going to have an old-fashioned draw, basically. And they do so, And it actually, you know, I thought Hal Jordan was going to, you know, come up with something really clever and, you know, there was going to just be this awesome team up. Not exactly. So Adam Strange gets shot right in the gut, like right in the chest area. And it looks like he is dead. He falls. They pick him up. They basically take him to what in their version of like a morgue or a coroner's office or whatever. And they're examining the body, and all of a sudden, he gets up, and he's like, oh my gosh, what's going on? But before all that, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. I guess Adam Strange's wife gets, you know, thrown into the mix here, and she goes guns blazing also, which I think was awesome.
Which is understandable, because she shows... kind of like how we saw Lois Lane last week, being really upset with Amanda Waller putting family, like threatening family. She reacted pretty accurately to how I would assume a mother would be, especially when not only she thought her husband was dead, but now that their daughter is in potential danger. Not potential, she is in danger. So I did enjoy the guns blazing, even though it does kind of mess up plans.
Yeah, and that's, you know, because she came in guns blazing because she thought Adam Strange was dead. He actually was not. It was all kind of a trick. Hal Jordan was able to play that off. I thought that was really, really cool. And this is where it kind of goes a little crazy for me. I'm not sure what happens, like... because then Hal Jordan is also in this, like, weird planet with a guy named...
Mirwedden?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it would be Mirwedden.
Yeah, yeah, it's Mirwedden. Yeah, he's actually... man, I read his story, like, in the 80s. He's actually, like, originally... he's, like, a sorcerer.
Okay.
But he's, like, originally... a villain towards Abin Sur. I mean, he doesn't necessarily look like this Jonah Hex looking dude. I mean, he looked a little bit more like a large Mixie. He kind of reminded me a little bit of like a Mixie. So he's just like a sorcerer, mainly Abin Sur, but then it later went on towards, you know, him with like Hal Jordan and stuff like that. So
interesting.
This is actually interesting. So I'm wondering if like, you seeing Adam kind of like disappearing and then what ended up happening with like that ring and it little by little, I wonder if this is like the work of Mirwedden. Because again, he looks different here. So I don't really know if he's still considered a sorcerer kind of like in that kind of sense.
Or if Grant Morrison is changing him a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll have to see.
See, and I will say, I think I would have appreciated it a little bit more if I knew that. Because that's one of the things that I love. I love when creators pull from the, you know, old source material and bringing them back in continuity. So now I'm going to have to find that story and read up on them. So I'll probably do that after this, actually.
Yeah, what was it called? I mean, I know this was in, you know, I don't even think it was in the 80s. I think maybe it was. It was like something, the world of the power ring, world inside the power ring, or war of the power ring, something like that. Mm-hmm. That's what it's called. But it's a really, I mean, it was really interesting. Like I dug like who he was as a character. I was like, okay, cool. And especially that was like in the middle. I remember reading it because it was kind of like when I was in that high of like what Geoff Johns was doing with Green Lantern. I wanted as much. So that's when I was reading like Zero Hour. I was like, you know, I started going back, and I remember reading what was kind of like a Silver Age, like top Green Lantern stories, and that was one of them.
Oh, okay, okay.
And when I read it, yeah, it's just yeah. So he's kind of like a, I mean, he looks nothing like that, but he's kind of like a Mixie.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
So, talking about Justice League.
Yes. This
dude, this issue was nuts.
Yes, so crazy. I love what they're doing. I'm not loving the situation that Superman is in.
Yeah, what the heck, man?
But, dude, like, I will say this opening scene. Well, first, the book, of course, is written by Scott Snyder. It is penciled by George Jimenez. I believe he also does the colors on his own, correct?
Yeah. Okay. And I believe I know he did it with the last issue. So I'm going to just assume that he does it with this one too, where he's also responsible for like the plot.
Yes, yes, he.
But
he
it, did. But in this book, it's actually Alejandro Sanchez. He does the colors.
Oh, okay, yeah, I see that right now. The credits was at the very, very end. But with the opening scene between the Superman that we know and the sixth dimension future Superman, that was like an oh crap moment. And you even see it on Superman's face.
That was an awesome when you see him like with that scream and he has that really big facial, like he's ready to do like the ultimate haymaker, where you have like the future Superman just going like, and he stops it with his finger.
Stops it with one finger, that, just like holding it right there.
That's a strong ass pointer finger.
You know, the same reaction that I had with the Black Mirror James Gordon reveal, I had with this. Like,
I actually need that to be a poster. That panel of when it's all silhouette, like in white.
Yes, I would definitely be okay. And you have the ripples of where the punch was.
Yes.
I love that. It's awesome.
And I love him doing, like, they show, like, I love in art, like, the little subtleties where you're actually, after you see that beautiful white, like, silhouette splash, then it shows, like, his actual finger, but you actually see him doing, like, hand-to-hand combat.
Yes.
Instead of it just being, like, oh, you saw that, and then the next panel is just him smashing his face to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I love that little subtle three panel on the top of the page where it shows him doing kind of like, bam, like a little Krav Maga, kind of like grab the wrist, bam.
And then throwing like him down, yeah.
Yeah, like I thought that was really cool. And seeing how that one move kind of reminds me of, you know, like in Infinity War, Iron Man does everything he possibly can.
Yes.
He used everything he had. And it was, like, barely for a droplet of blood. Like, this one, it wasn't even that. Like, there wasn't even blood. And Superman gave everything he had.
I mean, Superman is bloodied up all over his face. But what came afterward really surprised me. So, when we were introduced to this abyss that Superman is in, I believe 2 issues ago, we saw that he was just in this black abyss. And we saw, like, on his feet or near his feet, we saw other supermen. I thought that this was a callback to a story that happened in Superman early on in Rebirth, with him joining up with all the other super people of the different parts of the multiverse.
Yeah, it was like multiplicity.
Yes. I thought that was this. I thought he was stuck in the same world and somehow he would be able to, you know, find another Superman, and they would, you know, be able to escape. But from what I see now, what it is that this older Superman has been killing our current Superman over and over and over and over again. And that is terrifying. You even
that is.
You see the terrified look on Clark's face when he pretty much beats him to what he was about to say. And he's like, yeah, I've heard it all before. Remember, you know. And he just flies off. And he knows, oh, if this is your response, I know what happens after this response. You keep fighting, and then I kill you. So I'm just going to let you live for now, and he flies off.
Yeah, and he mentions that there's, like, that little, that he created this little pocket, but right around there's, you know, there's food for you and stuff like that. He's like, but if you jump, then you've literally like killed yourself.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, he put him, and I love that right when he says like, goodbye, Superman, you see the fear in Clark's eyes. Like he's like, what is this? Because there's usually, even in moments like when, during like the earlier parts of Rebirth, when he was fighting, I think it was Zod, and he was like blind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he got stuck in like the black, I know it wasn't the
The Black Void in Argus.
Yes, and he got like stuck, and like that was like kind of like where you're like, man, this is the most vulnerable I've ever seen him. Because then, you know, he ends up coming back and he's like blind and he's trying to fight Zod blind.
Yeah,
like you're like, dude, this guy is done. I feel worse for him here.
Oh yeah,
because over there you're like, yes, okay, it was very. But, and that's why I give a lot of credit to Jimenez, because I was like, whoa, I am sensing his fear. The other times it's kind of like, Art, if you have to tell me in like the inner monologues or something like that, how you're scared, but the art doesn't represent it in facial expressions, then I kind of feel like, man, it's missing something. Jimenez nails facial expressions.
Yes.
So that's what is a huge highlight, because I don't need Snyder to tell me how doomed Superman is. I mean, I'm hearing it from the villain, but I'm also seeing it with my own eyes.
With Superman.
And that's what I like.
For sure. And, you know, we jump into that right afterward. We see Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson having what seems like a nice little lunch in a very bright Gotham. And we get the back and forth between them about, you know, Dick Grayson is saying, hey, you know, this is what everybody wanted. This was the dream, you know, this is what we were always aiming for. And, you know, Batman is still kind of in disbelief, but at the same time, he feels this peace. And he had said, you know, whenever he would leave on his nights of fighting, he would temporarily feel that peace.
Yes.
But it would always come back.
Mm-hmm.
And that same feeling he feels right now while he is with Dick Grayson. And right when they're really getting into the conversation, Martian Manhunter's like, hey, Bruce, you need to come into the Mind Council, and we need to square some things out. Something is not right. And that is when everything goes to crap.
Yeah, I mean, you thought with what was going on with Superman, you thought that he was like, okay, I can't see how the story, it must clearly get like slower after, you know, these were two pretty big bullets. No, that was like a six compared to what you get later. Because now this is Kendra and John, Martian Manhunter, they are getting ready to tell the team that what this world is not what they think it is. There is something more. And of course, when we were finally going to get a chance to see what it was, the Superman, future Superman of Sixth Dimension comes in and crashes the party. And he goes, no, you're not going to tell them I am. And little by little, they're like, well, no, you're not our Superman. So like, who are you? And he reveals who he is. And he is the World Forger. And that was...
He looks terrifying, by the way.
I mean, an awesome reveal. Like, it was... Because now, not only... First of all, I got to give a huge props. I think Jimenez is the one that created the design of Perpetua. And now, like, this one with, like, the World Forger. I love the way that his designs... I don't really remember... Because did he do the annual? Isn't that the first time you see Perpetua?
Yes.
Yeah, that was Jimenez, correct? Or was that Chang?
I want to say it was Chang.
It was Chang? Okay.
I think so.
Then, well, either or, it was amazing. And he puts the Justice League in a very... I mean, the Justice League are always in tough predicaments.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is a pretty... This is a really tough predicament that they're in. And I always wonder when you're getting in a stories like this, how, like, you saw how he just manhandled Superman. I never understand how the Justice League get out of these situations.
Oh,
like, I gotta give, like, mad props to these writers, because here it's kind of like they have to work with the World Forger because of the ripple between the Source Wall getting cracked and the ending doom that's happening. They have to be pretty much, I guess you got to say, like, the Justice League have to be like cops in a way, where they're pretty much just putting those who are good are okay, and those who are bad, you just have to pretty much put them into a prison and leave them to their death.
Well,
and those are literally the only options that they have.
Yeah, and so we will get to that, but I will say this.
Yeah.
The reveal that the World Forger is the brothers to the Monitor and the Anti-Monitor, like, that itself was like, oh my gosh. Like, you know, we, these two legacy characters that we've had since the 80s, you know, with Crisis on Infinite Earths, when those two characters were brought into a bigger playing field with everybody else.
Wasn't that revealed last issue?
Was it? I don't remember it.
I believe that when they were doing the whole...
Wasn't it like a history lesson type thing?
Like the history lesson? I believe like when it was talking, when they were talking about Perpetua and they were talking about like the three children.
Oh.
I believe it was Anti-Monitor, Monitor, and it did mention the World Forger. So it was just like, I felt like that was like a nice tease to actually, okay, we mentioned him in the past, and now we're going to bring him up now, like in current time.
Okay.
Because we saw what a threat he was in the story, in the recap,
mm-hmm.
but now we're seeing him actually live. So they know who they're dealing with.
See, it-
so I felt, maybe that's why for you it felt like a big reveal. Because I was like, yes, it's cool. Like, I was just happy that I actually got to see how menacing he really is, because I felt... I'm actually trying to find my Justice League 20 to see if that was the case, or maybe the history lesson was just Anti-Monitor and the Monitor, and I'm thinking the World Forger was added in there.
Yeah, I...
But you can go ahead with your thought. I'll see if I can find it.
Because for me, you know, I might have, like, just forgotten about that small detail. And so, like, because I forgot about it, it made this reveal, like, oh my god, this is crazy. But
it mentions it here.
It does.
She created our multiverse using the seven unnatural energies. She tried to make something vicious that lived forever. But her sons, the one you know as the Monitor, Anti-Monitor, and the World Forger, alerted the others to her doings.
Okay.
So yeah,
okay.
They show, like here, I don't know if you could see it through the iPad, but it's like they show them three and you see like Perpetua like on the background.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So...
Still a cool reveal, even knowing.
But I will say, I love his design. I love the colors that they chose for this character. He looks very menacing, very scary. But we quickly jump back to our dimension to see Mixie, Mira, and Starman, and of course, Jaro.
Which is the best panel in this comic book?
You think so?
Even with the punch, when he's pretty much just unwishing existence.
Oh, the one where you see like the drawings and the pencil and everything.
Yeah, because he's like he's unimagining everything in existence. So you're literally seeing existence coming off like the comic book page.
Yeah, that,
and I love like that. So
that is
like
really
I love
cool.
like that breaking where I'm like. That reminds me, I don't know if it was like Shirtless Bear Fighter, where you see, there was an actual, no, you know what, I'm lying. It wasn't Shirtless Bear Fighter. It was the book, the comic Clue.
Okay.
So when you're reading the comic book Clue based on like the board game,
yeah.
And there were characters, did you ever, this is like a guilty pleasure, but did you ever see, I think it was like on VH1 or something, the show Whodunit, which was pretty much Clue, but it was a reality TV show?
I feel like I've seen like maybe one episode. It sounds familiar.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the butler was kind of like, yes, he's like the hosting of the show in a way, but he's also breaking fourth wall and he's talking to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the butler did the same thing in that comic book where he would be like, no, this is such lazy writing. And you see him like moving the comic page and he's actually like screaming at the actual writer of the comic book. So the artist wrote the actual writer, like he drew him
in
his office drawing the comic and saying like, dude, this makes no sense in the story. So when I'm seeing this and I'm seeing it kind of looks like even George Jimenez's pencil is getting unwished as well.
Yeah, I see it like dissolving. It looks really, really cool.
Yeah, I love that. I thought that like that was my favorite panel.
Yeah, so the reveal, like we were saying, is that Jaro is attaching himself to Mixie and he's realizing that his what he is doing is he is actually unimagining everything in existence, because his power is normally to reimagine or imagine things into existence. So he's actually doing the opposite. But we jump back to the World Forger and the League in Martian Manhunter's Mind Council, and the World Forger kind of like lays down the law of how and why the world in their sixth dimension is the way it is. And
yeah,
it's kind of terrifying. You know, the we very quickly get the answer to Batman's question last issue, and we'll hold that to the end because that's the big reveal. But the World Forger says, hey, in each world, there is good people and there is bad people. And you need to understand that in order to have a peaceful universe, we only need good people. So
mm-hmm.
he is basically saying, when you go back to your dimension, you need to save all of the good people. And does he tell them to bring them to the sixth dimension? Or I can't remember if that was the thing that
I don't know if it was exactly bringing them back. I think it was more like just imprison them.
Yeah, so he was telling the him to imprison he was telling the League to imprison the villains. And well, I don't even think it was in prison, because people were I think it was Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, they were all talking about like killing, or if they were like dead or whatever. And Batman says, you know, because they go back to what they were talking about in, oh, in the very first arc of this book, how they
yeah.
voted on the totality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's like, oh, yeah, I would do the same thing. I would do the same thing. I would do the same thing. And Batman sits there and says, I wouldn't.
That was like, whoa.
That, like, and it brings everybody to a halt. And they're like, what are you talking about? You wouldn't. We're heroes. This is what we need to do. And Batman,
he's like, maybe it's time we stopped.
Yeah. And this always comes, and I think it's a small trope that Justice League has, that, you know, it's the very stereotypical, we do all we can, but there's still always trouble. You know, there's still, mm-hmm. there's always disasters. There's always evil. You know, when are we enough type of thing? And they basically said, okay, well, if we're not going to agree with this, then I'm sorry, World Forger, we can't agree to what you were saying for us to do. And he's like, mm-hmm. fine, then you were going to go with the rest of the evil people that are here. And they get,
ooh,
they get
Apocalypse.
They get teleported to Apocalypse. And it is scary. We finally get the answer to Batman's question. There is cells upon cells upon cells, and Apocalypse has turned into a prison where all the villains are.
Yep.
And we see who runs this prison. Lois Lane.
She looked badass.
She looks like she has seen some things.
Yes, like those eyes say the story.
She is not happy. She looks a little aged. She has those dark circles under her eyes. So we know that she has gone through some stuff in this prison of Apocalypse.
Yeah, and it makes me feel like she's going to have a redemption. Like, I feel like she's going to see some part where she ends up finding Clark.
Oh,
because I think that this led her to this path because of possibly whatever happened to Clark. And, you know, you just lose your way.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I think that there's going to be a really nice reunion kind of moment where when Superman comes back and I would hope so. Like, he's going to eventually come back and, you know, help out the League here. I'm really looking forward to seeing what a lost Lois Lane and, you know, her actually seeing, like, her husband again.
Yes.
Obviously, it's not the same one, well, that we know of, but it's very interesting. I'm really, really, really looking forward to this. But this book went bananas.
Yeah.
And it was really nice. What I liked about the whole sixth dimension thing. I don't know with the whole like Dick Grayson thing, but seeing him with like the red bat suit, it made me feel like this was a callback to like even Future's End.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like the Future's End and World's End with like New 52. Like I thought, like, okay, this is really cool. Like I like the little callback. I mean, I hope that's what it is because it kind of like that's what it felt like. But this issue was amazing, and I'm loving the story. Yes, it takes sometimes maybe with Snyder. I always say that he's my last read, unless it's with Morrison, because I feel like I need to read the book the slowest because I can't read this in at a normal pace because there's way too much nuance that you need to pay attention to.
Yeah, Snyder is very, very famous for having a lot of dialogue. A lot of dialogue bubbles when it comes. And the really cool thing is that it did not ruin the art. You know, I was recently reading through the Court of Owls story in New 52, and the bubbles on one page covered up a lot of Capullo's art, and it like kind of depressed me for a little bit. But in this, it was just enough of him and his art to still be able to see the book, and it was really, really pretty, of course. But Snyder does like to talk a lot with his characters.
Yeah, his exposition, because, I mean, I like it, but at times, it is a little too much, because I love how he gives you a lot of hints. It's kind of like his inner monologues and those narrations. It feels like I'm reading like a character piece,
mm-hmm.
and it does help set the tone of what that comic is, what I'm going to read in this issue.
Yeah.
And I like it, but sometimes it is very distracting. And in a way it's very disheartening when you're flipping a page and you see about 47 word bubbles on a 12 inch sheet of paper.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do know what you mean, but, I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy this and I can't wait for the next issue.
Same here. You know, I was a little disappointed because, you know, the tease that we got with last issue was Batmite. And I was really hoping that Batmite was going to show up somewhere in here. But I don't think so. I think that we won't see Batmite until they get out of the sixth dimension.
Yeah, no, I think Batmite might come because we already see Mixie is kind of right now going nuts. So I feel that the more that, you know, this whole existence getting wished away, I think Luther is going to have to do something to stop Mixie. And that's when he's going to bring his own imp. And you're going to be seeing, you know, Batmite going up against like a crazed Bane-like Mixie.
Okay.
Where it's going to be, you're just going to get like, yeah, it's going to be the War of the Imps.
Yeah.
And I'm all for it. I'm 100% all for it.
Yes.
Young Justice number 4.
I have issues with this book, Mark.
Yeah, this issue. Okay, besides the team hug, which was kind of cool, and seeing Tim and Cassie, seeing Connor. Awesome. That was a cool moment.
The reason, let me just break it down really quick. This book goes back and forth way too many times.
That part didn't bother me so much because I don't know much about Amethyst. So seeing a little bit of her background, because I didn't read her during the New 52. So seeing a little bit of where she stands in her own world,
mm-hmm.
it was nice to see as that character. It's just I don't care much about the character.
Well,
to enjoy it. But it wasn't bad. Like, it didn't bother me.
It may be the old-fashioned in me. Whenever it comes to character stories, I would like them to be kind of the filler episodes or the filler issues.
Okay.
So if they wanted to do this, they could have made Amethyst's backstory this issue and then next issue be everything else that's in this book, plus a little bit more because they would have been able to push a little bit more in this book.
Okay.
That's the only gripe that I have with this thing, because for me, and people can call me dumb, people can call me stupid, people say that I am slow, I don't care. It was very hard for me to keep up with what in the world was going on. I know that they have two different artists to show, you know, the different times, which I love both pieces of art. I will say, because I forgot to say it in the beginning, of course, this is written by Brian Michael Bendis. The art that I was talking about is by Patrick Gleason and John Timms. And the colors are from Alejandro Sanchez and Alex Sinclair. Awesome art. I love the art.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The art's gorgeous.
I will say my favorite panel of this entire book is the very last panel with Amethyst and Robin. That is probably my favorite panel in this book. I'm a huge fan of Superboy, but I didn't really get a really good panel with him for me. But this whole thing is the characters pretty much getting out of the pickles that they were in. We know that Bart and Superboy were confronting those guards, and we know that everybody else was imprisoned. And we learn just like the characters learn, that Amethyst is the princess of Gem World, and what that means and what that entails. And they're like, oh, cool. You know, that means if you're a princess, people will come save us. And then we learn in that backstory that the people of Gem World don't like to help her out because she kind of gets herself in trouble a whole lot.
Yeah. But she's a hero, so you have like that confliction.
Yeah. And
exactly.
One thing that I didn't know about Amethyst is in that backstory and in the current time, we learn that she is actually from Earth.
Now, yeah, she's a freaking Packers fan. What the hell?
Yeah, I saw that that little Slack conversation this morning. but the I will say the hug was cool. You know, you got the original team members come back, and then we get that small glimpse. I do like that. So on top, you see the hug, and then right below that, we see the three other new members. And it's not showing division, but it shows, hey, this is who we were, and this is who we are going to be, kind of thing, which I thought was really cool. I still want to learn a little bit more about the Teen Lantern. I can't remember her name yet. I don't think she's even said it yet.
I don't think so. And if it did, it rolled right past me.
Yeah.
Because Bendis at times also has that issue with the exposition.
But then we basically jump in right with the backstory or whatever, the flashback from where this story started, right when she meets Tim Drake. So, and like I said, that's my favorite panel. I don't know why. It might be the colors. I really love the colors on that.
I think it's the usage of the purple.
Yeah,
like it's really between the purple and the dark. It looks really nice.
Yes.
I'm with you. That's a gorgeous... I mean, honestly, the best thing I've seen so far of Connor is probably the B variant.
Yes. So...
Yes, like that. Like that's a good look. I mean, I can clearly see that Bendis must be a really big fan of the classic looks because you're having like the Superboy of like 80s, 90s kind of look.
And,
you got the...
And I will say...
Bringing the trunks back.
And I think I said this before, maybe on our first episode... Or in a conversation we had, but I think Bendis very much is the kind of person that sees the new stuff and he's like, well, this isn't what I have been reading. I was really reading the 90s stuff. And so he's grabbing all of this 90s material and throwing it right into now.
I'm not liking the suit. Like, I understand. I mean, I liked it when I read Death of Superman. I dig it. When I'm reading it now... It just feels very out of place.
Now,
it feels like those writers, in terms of like, I mean, I don't mind where the story's going. It just seems like sometimes you kind of get stuck in, oh, in my day it was better.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in this case, having a suit that, I mean, just like the way that the color scheme looks kind of going on, the leather jacket with the little spikes on the top, it just feels, I'm like, I
would prefer either Dan Mora, which is one of my favorite artists in all of comics right now, which did the B variant for this book. If he was doing the book, I could totally say, hey, you know what? I want Superboy in this suit for the rest of the series. But
well, the based on the way that he drew him, yes, it looked good. But again, that's only like mid back up.
Yeah, exactly.
So it looked good. It's just the rest of the suit is the part that.
So I would I would definitely say that by the time these characters are back on Earth and they are, you know, getting to know each other a little bit more, I need Superboy to have a different suit. I will say this, Superboy with the black leather jacket, with the sunglasses, with that one-piece suit, is my favorite Superboy. But I know that this Superboy that we see today is from the 90s. I know that nostalgia is in for like the past like 3 years. Nostalgia has been in, but we need to move a little bit forward so that way these characters can grow.
Yes, absolutely. And it's funny that you mentioned it because I actually have, this was a while ago, like in 2014 or something. And I saw Mora in a convention and I actually purchased one of his like Superman, like original prints of a Kingdom Come Superman. So I'm with you when it comes to Mora, that I'm a huge fan like of his work. Because at first, it's like that's my second like original print. Because my first one was David Finch. Because I was a huge David Finch fan with what he was doing with Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
So when he jumped over to DC, I was like, oh my god, this is amazing! Like I need like now when I see David Finch, I'm like, okay. His art doesn't grab me the same way it did, like, when I was first getting into comics.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, I'm still proud. Like, I'm still happy with that piece. But that Dan Mora one, it's sexy. I like it.
Yeah. No, I got interested in Dan Mora stuff, and I got introduced to Dan Mora with Power Rangers. Go-Go Power Rangers. He did the main covers on those for the longest time, and he also did the interiors for that book for the longest time. He's unfortunately off it now, and he has been recently doing random variants for DC, and he's been doing it ever since the beginning of Rebirth. He was on Batgirl. He was on, I think he was on Titans for a little bit also. Did one for... He's doing some for Flash right now. I know that for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think I have one of them here that's actually on my wall. I just like the way... I like his art style because I love how he draws that it's mainly almost all of his art is with the white background.
Yes.
So it's just like the person... It just... I don't know. It like pops out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, you know, backgrounds are... You know, they're nice, but it's kind of like when you're just seeing a white page and this just gorgeously drawn color... It just makes the white, like, it just seems like a 3D pick.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I've always loved about his art. But yes, Dan Mora. Look at that. Dan Mora talk. Comic Book Legion. Love it. So Young Justice is I enjoyed it. And this week, honestly, it was Green Lantern, surprisingly, was a highlight. But, I mean, Justice League to me kind of... It was good that it came out this week because I honestly would have not have known what would have been the fifth book because I did not want to talk like Harley Quinn or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm happy overall for a very odd considering this is not like an annuals week or a fifth week in comics. This was a slow week, but you know there were at least five books that we could at least have conversation on. So I'm really proud of it. I mean, did you have any other thoughts in terms of the books?
Well, one thing that we forgot to do last week, which I think we should still kind of, we can do now, but, our different, top fives, you know, in what order or whatever.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay.
My five, you know, the five books that we talked about in order for me from the best going down to, not necessarily the worst, but least interested for me. It was Justice League, Deathstroke, Female Furies, Young Justice, and Green Lantern.
I have Justice League, Green Lantern, Female Furies, Young Justice, and Deathstroke is my five.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we did forget about that. I think it's just because it was the Detective Comics.
Yeah, we were
1000, and we knew that we went longer than what we planned for.
But that also reminds me, because I need a bone to pick with all of our listeners right now. So we're gonna do the same thing this week as we did last week and the week before that. We know that we have a giveaway at the end of April, right?
Yep.
We left a question at our very first episode. We had, I think, a few people answer that question. We didn't have anyone answer the question for last week. I am hurt, guys. I am so hurt. We need to have that question answered as well as the question for this week answered. Mark, I've been giving out the questions. I want you to give out the question for this week.
Well, to go with that, we actually did get one answer. It was just not given to us on the actual post on Twitter.
Oh.
So someone emailed.
Okay, cool.
Us.
Cool.
And I mean, yeah, so we did get one. We did get one.
All right.
Which was from Tony Walton.
Oh.
So he did mention his what he did like in terms of his Detective Comics. But when it comes to this the question for this week, what I wanted to know is, I was actually thinking in terms of Green Lantern.
Okay.
And with Green Lantern, there's always a lot of discussion in terms of who your favorite Earth Lantern is. Green Lantern, my first introductions to Green Lantern was the animated stuff. Mm-hmm. So Jon Stewart has a special place in store for me.
Okay.
But I am one of those people, and it's my Superman complex, where people are always saying that Superman is boring and that drives me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
There are many people, and some I follow, that mention that Hal Jordan is like just a board. Like, he has no personality whatsoever. He is boring. And this is why Grant Morrison, because of this one interview that he did, where a lot of people are throwing the notion that he is boring and he's here to prove that he's not. So they're using the ammunition. If you need someone to say that you're not boring, that means you're boring. So I want to know, do you think that Hal Jordan is a boring character?
Okay.
So that would be the question, is what are your thoughts on Hal Jordan? And again, answer this question on the post that when we release the episode and we advertise it out, that's where we want to see the answer of what your guys' thoughts are.
Or on the email. So that was my fault.
Yes.
I definitely need to be checking that a little bit more than I do. But
that's to be fair, that's mainly where our writers, for our contributors, mm-hmm. that again, if you are more than willing, if you want to be a contributor on our website, then yeah, you could message either Clay, myself, or the CB_Legion. But yeah, mainly our contributors, when they write their reviews, it does go there. Like, that's been the main hub.
Okay.
But we did appreciate Tony writing a response to that.
Yes.
Yes.
So please answer either on the email or on the actual post where we post the episode. This should be coming out tomorrow. A little fourth wall breaking there. We are recording Wednesday. But with all of that said, guys, we thank you so much. Again, the community has been awesome throughout the page, throughout our account. We have a lot of things starting to come into fruition as far as the Nation of Nerds Network and some little projects coming in and out. So we are very, very excited about the things to come. But I wanted to just say my 2 cents on that question. Whoever is saying that Hal Jordan is boring did not read the original Green Lantern Rebirth by Geoff Johns. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I was actually going to say that. but, like, either you read it and you have forgotten about it, or you just don't remember who he actually is.
Yeah, he that was my reintroduction to the character.
Yes.
My first...
Well, to many, because he was lost as Parallax for so long.
Yeah, so for me, yeah. I was introduced to Hal Jordan through, what was the, was it, Zero Hour or Final Night, mm-hmm. or what is it called? I think it was...
Well, Zero Hour.
Yeah, Zero Hour was my introduction to Hal Jordan, and then... I kind of trace back to Green Lantern Rebirth, the first one. Jeff Johns loves Rebirths, by the way, guys, if you hadn't mm-hmm. noticed. That was my introduction to that character, and it was awesome. I absolutely love Hal. There is another Green Lantern, which is my favorite, but if we ever get into that conversation, we will definitely jump on it. But plugs, we just said that Comic Book Legion... .com is where you can read all of our reviews. It's where you can listen to this podcast also. You can also listen to it anywhere any other podcasts are shown, whether that be iTunes, Google Play. I use Pocket Cast. I know Stitcher is one as well. Spotify. Are we on Spotify?
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're on Spotify, iHeartRadio. Again, it will be under the Nation of Nerds tab.
Yes.
I'm trying to find a way, if there's a way to have like the Nation of Nerd, but also have like, if you type Comic Book Legion on as like a keyword, it'll pop up under Nation of Nerd. Mm-hmm. So that's something I'm working on with the actual people that publish the podcast.
Okay.
Because I mean, I could see how that could be a little confusing.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to make it easier where everything gets streamlined wherever you just place mm-hmm. Comic Book Legion.
Yes.
So in the meantime, just go over to Nation of Nerds. On the podcast app, Stitcher, Google, iHeart, wherever you can find it, you'll find us there.
Yes.
Or you can find our website. Again, you can reach us at comicbooklegion@gmail.com. That is our email.
Mm-hmm.
CB_Legion. That is our Twitter page. You can find me at Mark Fosses. And
you can find me at Fanboy Clay.
All right. So remember, answer the question, is Hal Jordan boring? And we will talk to you guys next week.
All right.
See ya.
See ya.